Hold up. Let's get real.
Funny enough, I obviously ordered your book, which we're going to get to, but it came.
Yay! Oh my gosh,
I know. So before we begin, I just want to remind everybody to subscribe to the podcast, Real Talk with Ronnie, wherever you listen to your podcast, Spotify, iTunes, we're available everywhere. But welcome, Thajal. I'm very excited to meet you finally. I mean, we've spoken on the phone a bunch of times and through Instagram, but never like this.
I know. I'm excited. And
this is the new way. We met through the Hey Mama group, which has been such a great resource, I think, for the both of us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how's your quarantine been?
It's been, it definitely had its waves, like ups and downs. I would say it was really, really hard in the beginning because I was going through my book launch right when everything started. And so having the kids home was really, really challenging. And wow. Then we went through a phase of, like, we're adaptable beings, right? So we found a new normal. And then now with school, I know that you're sending your daughter to school, and I just sent my boys back to school. So it's been another adjustment, I feel like, now. But it's been a blessing. I know that it's been so challenging for so many people. So really count our blessings that we've been safe and
good. Good, good. I thought that this was very timely of us because now more than ever, I'm finding the need to be more mindful myself. And then I have, you know, a 2.5-year-old and she throws tantrums and is now voicing her opinion about everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I find, like, myself, I have to catch myself to not blow up and also throw my own adult tantrum. Because, you know, sometimes regardless of what's going on, you forget they're only two and they don't know and this is how they're expressing their feelings. But, you know, she also has no idea that I'm fighting with a client and people are, you know, screaming at me through email or whatever may be happening in the day. So a lot of times I have to, like, remind myself to breathe. And I thought that this was great because I didn't know that you could teach meditation to kids. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people don't know that. I think it's hard enough for adults to learn it and to practice it. Mm-hmm. So I want to get to all that, but you didn't start off by being an Ayurvedic mindful meditation certified expert.
No.
You were a divorce attorney, which is complete opposite, I would say.
You know, it's interestingly enough, like, I was going on my spiritual journey as a divorce attorney. However, I specialize in all out-of-court divorce resolution. So I did divorce mediation and collaborative divorce. So there is an essence, I always used to say, I'm like part attorney, part therapist, because you're really in tune with what's happening emotionally, because most of my clients were parents. And so it was very interesting and synchronistic that I was personally experiencing a lot of anxiety in my life. So I was going to yoga, and that's when I was discovering meditation and mindfulness. And I recognized that I was an undiagnosed child who had anxiety. So I had anxiety for most of my life. And when I was talking to my clients, many of their children were being diagnosed with anxiety. And I was like, that's what I had. And these are the tools now as an adult that I'm finding are beneficial. So really my seed got planted. If I wasn't a divorce attorney, I don't necessarily know I would have came to this path, because I felt like I had that urgency of then, okay, there are children still experiencing this and they need the tools. And that's really what sparked my desire to become a certified yoga and meditation and mindfulness teacher for kids. And and then that was 10 years ago. And now where we are.
That's amazing. I always find it, most people that I bring on to Real Talk with Ronnie did not go to school for what they're brought on to talk to me about. And it's always through some other experience that they've had that they've realized what they want their path to truly be. And I feel like that's just what it takes. You know, you won't know until something happens, and then it's like a domino effect. Right. And it's funny that you say, that you're a therapist. I mean, I'm you know, knock on wood, I don't ever have to use a divorce attorney, but I'm sure that they are therapists. It's such a huge life-changing event that's so sad and so traumatic. Yeah. In the same respect, when you buy a home, it's very happy, but it's also super stressful, and it's the most money you will ever spend on purchasing a single asset. And so I also feel like I'm a therapist all the time, to buyers, but also to sellers who are getting rid of their home because they obviously feel that they built the Taj Mahal. Right. And so they deserve all the money in the world.
Right.
And when people bring in offers, you know, you hear in the industry a lot, well, we don't want to be insulting. And it's like, I'm never going to get insulted by the offer you present. However, I understand because sometimes sellers really feel insulted. They take it very personally. How dare you tell me that you think my house is only worth XYZ? So it's funny because regardless of our professions, everybody still has to play a little emotional therapist role.
Yeah.
Just because everything we do is so emotionally tied to who we are.
You're right. I can see exactly what you're saying. Like when you're selling a house, it's like your pride and joy, and you're like, you know, we want to sell, but then there's like that emotions of letting go, like that process of letting go as well. So I can see that.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to get to the book because I'm very excited that I received it, but I will tell you, I like literally just received it. So I've been skimming, but I don't know how I'm going to use it yet. I do appreciate though that there's 40 different types of activities to manage everything, emotions, anxiety, and stay focused. So I'm sure there will be a few useful tools. But my question is, and I'm sure many people have this question before purchasing your book, you know, my daughter's attention span is very small. It's very hard for her to focus on one thing. I mean, even while playing, you know, she's done and on to the next thing. So how do you get them to sit there and do whatever activities you have in this book?
Yeah. So how often do we hear, I know as children we heard it, and also as parents we say it, pay attention, focus, concentrate. And we largely assume that this is a skill that's innate, that we should know how to focus, we should know how to pay attention. However, learning how to focus and pay attention to one thing at a time is a learned skill. And so what we do know that children learn through movement, they learn through stories, they learn through play. And this is scientific based. And so when you're working with young children, what we tend to think is like, okay, let's equate it to teaching the ABCs, right? When we start with young children to teach the ABCs, do we sit them down and expect them to write their letters and know how to read sentences and know how to read books? No, there's a foundation, right, that we build. We start with songs, we start with letters, we start with games to circle the letters and sight words. And, you know, it's a progression, right? And so when you're teaching meditation, it's the same sort of thing as if you're teaching the ABCs. You start with movement, you start with songs, you make it fun and quippy, because the idea is that you're planting the seeds when they're the young ages of 2 to 8, really. They're learning by imitation, right? So if you're saying take a deep breath in and out, it's not so much that they're learning the skill of like, this is when I take a deep breath. It is, I'm learning the awareness of that muscle memory of, oh, taking a deep breath in and out. So basically between the ages of, I would even say like 1.5 to 4, because you can really start that introduction of let's take a deep breath at a young age. So that's really like between 1 to 3, 1 to 4, depending on the age development of your child, you're really introducing these skills. And so what we think of with quintessential meditation is that you're sitting still, quietly, eyes closed, taking deep breaths.
Right.
And so this is your learning how to read chapter books. If we're equating it to the ABCs, this is where we're building up to. This is not the entry point of what we're expecting our children to do. And I think that's really, really crucial to get that big picture in. Because it is what we have to do is teach children to focus on one thing at a time. And the way that we do that is with giving them a mental anchor. And that's the same thing with grownups too. If we try to do like the passive meditation with no foundation, I like to call passive meditation where you're like focusing just on your breath. That's like the CrossFit of meditation. It literally is. It's like you're expecting expecting someone who's never worked out be like, go do a CrossFit class. And we know what's going to happen to someone who has no experience. They're either going to give up before they experience the benefit.
Or throw up.
Exactly. They're going to throw up. It's just not feasible. So what we're doing with children and even grownups is we're starting with what's called active meditation. And so with active meditation, there's three real categories of that. One is anytime you're teaching breath work, you're linking movement with it because that's training their brain to focus on something. And that's what's going to keep them engaged. Everything in the book that you'll see is very playful because that's how they hear, that's how they learn, right? That's how they're going to really stay excited about it. Right. And the third aspect is that you're using affirmations or guided meditation. So you as the parent are saying the words and they're learning the art of focusing their attention. So when you're using affirmations, there's these words that are being planted into their subconscious. So it's a way of basically we're planting seeds so that as they grow, they realize, oh, okay, when I feel this big feeling, I can go back to this tool. So there's going to be a connection point. Like my son is 5 and he's now making these connections, but you're starting at a young age where you're building like this active breathing. So their eyes may be open. Their body is moving. I want them to be moving because that's mm-hmm. what I'm going to be teaching them, that that's what their breath goes in and out. And then eventually they're going to learn how to close their eyes and still do the movement. And then the third step is to close their eyes and no movement. So it's a gradual progression.
Okay, that makes sense. In earlier on in the quarantine, I started working out at home. Obviously, everything shut down. And my daughter was with me. We asked, you know, our nanny not to come. And so she was doing everything that I was doing. I mean, I was, you know, making eggs in the morning. She was like, it's mix time. And then I was exercising and she was like, it's exercise time. And so you're right. Like everything you do and you lead by movement, they pick up so fast.
Yes.
They do. And it's incredible because now, you know, I can see her listening to a song. And if she'll hear a word that she's heard before, she does the movement. Mm-hmm. That she knows goes associated with that word. So yes. That makes a lot of sense. So one of the things I was curious about is, you know, is it okay that we ourselves are not experts in meditation before we try and teach it to our young ones? Because, you know, I can say, sure, I enjoy yoga. Am I an expert at it? No. But I like to stretch because it makes me feel good. With that, sometimes, you know, I will try to meditate, but it's very mm-hmm. difficult for me. My mind wanders and mm-hmm. I'm no expert at it. So like the deep breathing for me is really where my mindfulness comes into play because it does help me de-stress during a situation or prior to engaging with her. So, do you require that there is a sense of the mindfulness and the meditation that we are accomplished in prior to teaching this to our children? Do you think that that's necessary?
So the short answer is no, but I qualify this by experience of teaching teachers and parents who have had no prior experience mm-hmm. in these skills. And the reason is that many of us have not learned these skills when we're younger. And right. we ourselves, like you just mentioned, right? Even myself, we also need to train our brain to focus on one thing at a time because this is not a skill set that we were taught. So it's when we teach, we're learning. And so in my style of teaching, like every exercise in that book, Meditation for Kids, as a certified yoga and meditation teacher, I wanted to take the ancient wisdom of when you're feeling a certain stress response, like if you're feeling anxious versus if you're feeling sad or low energy, or if you're feeling angry, there are different breathing resets. There's different yoga postures. These are universal. Right. It doesn't matter if you're a child or if you're a grown up, but the way we're presenting it to a child is very playful. And what I find is that even for myself, it is less daunting and it's easier to remember. Like, for example, I know, like, I don't do it the adult way, even though I've been practicing for 10 years. When I know I'm anxious, I do Windy Windmill. And that's because of the book, because it's an easier connection point to make. So I've almost found that parents are like, this is my entry point into
this. Got it. Yeah.
And I think if there's a willingness to meet your child, like I'm learning right aside, like right along you, it takes right. away that pressure. And I love this saying, it's like, you do not have to be like a sage or a guru. You don't have to be the sage from the stage. You just have to be the guide from the side. So you're right. a partner with your child as you learn, and everything in the book, as you go through it, you'll see, I have these notes at the bottom of like when to take this time in and why this works. This is, I made it for parents, but I also made it for older children. As they get older, they will understand why we're doing this tool. And right. for parents, they're understanding, okay, this is when I can use this tool. Or yeah, this is when I feel like this, I can use sipping strawberry smoothies, or I can use Windy Windmill, whatever it is. And so, yeah, I very much designed it so that it's a learning tool for parents as well.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And like I said earlier in our conversation, I find that I sometimes need it when I feel myself going through a tantrum, and it's an adult tantrum, so I'm reacting much differently than she is. However, you know, there's a lot of stressors, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, especially that is playing a big role on all of our mental health, I feel. And even if it's subconscious, we don't even realize that it's affecting us the way that it is, but we're constantly being bombarded by the media with what's going on, and everything that's going on is so negative. It's like, you know, sometimes you even feel guilty celebrating the small stuff on social media when so many people are suffering or going through hardship. So I just have to like decompress myself and then, you know, go on to tackle engaging with my daughter. Otherwise, you know what they say is true. They feel your energy. Mm-hmm. So if you're anxious and nervous and scared, then so are they, and they have no idea why.
Right.
And so like, even with the first day of school, like I was very nervous, but I chose to just spin that into like super excitement. Mm-hmm. And I was so scared that she wasn't going to go into the classroom, and she was going to go kicking and screaming and crying. And like, I had this fear the teacher was going to pull her out of my arms and shut the door. And I was going to be like, oh my God, so traumatic. But you know, we stood there, we weren't allowed in the classroom, and the teacher asked her a few questions. Do you want to wash your hands? Do you want to do this? And she said, no, no, no. And then I looked in the classroom and I saw something I thought would pique her interest. And I asked her, she said, no. Then the teacher came up and she was like, what about bubbles? Would you like to come play with bubbles? And she said, yes. And she like, darted in the classroom. And I was like, that's it. That's it.
It's worse up in our head sometimes. It's like more worse here, right? Than it really is.
Always. So if somebody wants to get started and teach their kids meditation and mindfulness, what would you say are the first steps? How do we get started? What do we do to sort of jump off the cliff?
Yeah, I think the first thing is understanding what's the purpose of why we're doing it, because there's two real purposes of this. So meditation is kind of like, you know how we teach our kids to brush their teeth every day and we teach them to take a shower? It's their daily act of self-care. Like, we would never tell our children that you only have to brush your teeth when you eat chocolate. Any other day, fair game. You don't have to brush your teeth, right? Like, we think that's like ridiculous, because we know that's a daily act of self-care and personal hygiene. So the first incentive of what we're doing with this practice is building the awareness that mental health and taking care of your mind is just as important as taking care of your body. So just like we brush our teeth every day, just like we take a shower, we brush our brain by meditating and taking deep breaths to get rid of yucky thoughts and feelings. So that is your daily self-care of like brushing your teeth. So when you pull an exercise from the book, for example, and it doesn't have to be very long. Like, I think we're more like outcome oriented. It's like, even if they do three breaths, I look at it as breaths rather than minutes that they've sat. So on a given day, they might sit for three breaths. You celebrate that. Maybe they'll sit for five breaths another day. Celebrate it. It's not so much the duration, it's the consistency. And that's the brushing of their teeth, brushing of their brain. That's like how I like to visualize it. Then we have the meltdowns. And the meltdowns are like your cavities. It's like, you wouldn't, a dentist wouldn't say, you know, just brush your teeth and the cavity will go away. Like, we know that if we could try to avoid it, we could try to yell it away. Like, that's not going to go away. When big feelings arise, we need a set of tools to help our children and ourselves. Like, as we honestly, like, we feel the same stress responses as well, of how to work through it. And so there's like the set of tools as a parent I look at it is that in those moments when there's a meltdown, we're the dentist and we are that skilled individual. And what I look at is that there's three moments that are kind of comprised in a meltdown. The first is the connection moment. Like, you can't ask your child to take a deep breath unless like they're in a red brain state. They're completely dysregulated. Anything you say is not going to be registered.
Right.
So in that red brain moment, it's all about connection. And you know it, like when we're with our children, we know when they're in that red brain state, they're not there. That's like, when they're, like some alien has taken over them. And we know that in ourselves too, right? Like when an alien has taken over and we're in rage mode, right? Like we are not fully coherent. And so what we have to remember, there's an exercise in the book. It's called heart to heart hug. And I know this from, and I learned this from my own experience of when I was in childbirth with my second son. And the first time I was like in a completely like meditative, like breathing state. The second one was so fast and furious. I was totally dysregulated. And my midwife held my hand and she tried to tell me like, take a deep breath, like slow your breath down. And it just wasn't registering for me. Then she just held my hand and just started like rubbing her fingers up my back. And she started taking the deep breaths and my eyes were closed, but I could feel her energy vibration. And that started regulating me just by her touching me in a specific way and her taking the slow deep breaths. I was like, it naturally just helped me start regulating. So in those moments of red brain, like when they are completely in loss, like they're melting down, it's more of our silence and our regulation. So if they allow you to touch them, the heart to heart hug is like when you're touching them and you are taking a deep breath in and out. And many times we do need that too. It's like helping us regulate. And so it's either about silence or it's about space. Some kids, like my son, there's moments that he's like having his meltdown, give him the space to ride it out in a safe place and then be like, whenever you're ready, I'm going to be here to help you. And then return back to them when they start, like, there'll be pockets that they start being in their yellow brain, like they're coming back slowly. And so then the yellow brain is the mindful moment. And the book has broken it down into if your child, like chapter two is about when your child is distracted, not focused, anxiety. So all mental stressors, the right tools for that. The second, the third chapter is all about anger, frustration, annoyance, like those heated feelings, those emotional stressors that we feel. And there's different types of resets or mindful tools that we help our child do. And then the third is if they're sad or disappointed or really like just bored or low energy, that's all chapter one. And that will help you boost their energy and their mood. So the first thing for us is like being aware of what emotional state is, because that's what's going to teach you the right chapter of like what tools. And you'll really know, like when there's mental stress, you need to help them slow down. When there's anger, frustration, you need to help them cool down physically. And then when there's sadness, you need to help them move their energy up. So the book is really strategically made in a way of like helping you through each of those. There's a connection moment, the mindful moment, and then the teachable moment. So what I've learned as a mom is that a lot of times when your child is riding through it, we want to like jump in there and like have the teachable moment right then and there, be like, this is a misbehavior and we want to correct it right away. So it's like, there's no questions that this is not acceptable. And what I find and what I've learned through research, this is science-based, is that your child's mind and our own mind need to be in a green brain state. It needs to be in a completely regulated state in order for them to learn. So they need to be in their playful, like non-stress state in order for them to even be able to hear what you're saying. And so what I've found is that teachable moments are actually really helpful at nighttime. And there's exercises in chapter five, which talk about like, let's retrace your day or let's start again, where you're inviting them and you've had enough time and distance from the experience that you're not triggered and you won't use triggering language either. So it's like, you remember when this happened, when you got upset, when blah, 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 you know, instead of this, like you could say, maybe next time we can try this. You can have such a more meaningful conversation of the teachable moment. And so that's where, you know, the book is really designed for you to give the self, the, you know, the daily self-care, but also help you ride through these mindful resets. So in essence, it's not like I'm tooting my own horn. It's just really the resource for parents to help them, you know, navigate the meltdowns and the daily like practice of meditation every day.
Yeah, and I think it's okay to toot your own horn, because as parents, like, it's just a guessing game, you know? Like, I find that I try to teach her what's right and wrong, and, you know, you're right. Like, in the moment, if something is happening and she's seeing red, she's not digesting anything I'm saying. She's just right. seeing red. And then later on, if we talk about it, she gets it. Like, she mm-hmm. she remembers what happens. Sometimes she doesn't want to talk about it, and I let it go. But other times, like, I can say, well, remember when you took your bowl of Cheerios and you poured it all over the floor? Then mommy had to clean that up, and you didn't help me, you know? Yeah. And so, like, next time, will you help me? And she's like, yeah, sure. So, you know, I totally appreciate that. And I'm going to take your advice about discovering the day at night, because we do that now, but only with the fun, happy things.
Yes, yes.
Did you have so much fun today when we went to the park? Remember when we saw the sea lions at the zoo? Mm-hmm. Did you have fun with your friend? Did you miss your friend? So we always go over the day, but we only really discuss the good parts. Yeah. And I think it's important that we incorporate some of the tantrums, because then at least she's remembering, like, oh, I did all of this today, right? Yeah. And, like, you also can maybe hopefully teach them a lesson.
Yeah, because it's also important, like, because the way that I give language in there, too, is, like, you have a big feeling visiting. It's not that you're angry or you're sad. It's like, oh, you had anger visit you today. And right. the idea is that, like, let's start again. It's like you're pressing the reset button. You're learning from your mistakes. And it's like even all the dialogue and the conversation pieces, it's like giving parents the language. So sometimes you're like, what do I say in that moment? Like when you're trying right. to do it. So it gives you the language to kind of realize like, okay, how can I retrace the day? And how do I remember that tomorrow's a new day? And right. there's going to be other feelings maybe that are going to visit. So yeah, it's just giving it a more non-threatening way of like discussing yeah. a mistake.
Yeah, which is helpful because you're right. Like sometimes it's hard to find the words. Like how mm-hmm. do you communicate correctly
yeah.
to a 2-year-old?
Yes, exactly.
So the last thing I want to talk to you about is the Meditation for Kids Masterclass that you created. Mm-hmm. It's basically like a roadmap, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So walk me through like how this course is helping parents, especially now during a pandemic, while they might be home, everybody is working from home.
Yes.
There is way more chaos, I would say, inside everyone's home mm-hmm. than there used to be.
Yeah. So I made it really as a supplement to the book, because a lot, I know this from my personal experience too. Like you can have a book, but it could also feel very overwhelming. 40 exercises, where do I start? What do I do? And I really wanted to take away that overwhelm. So in my last 10 years of teaching, you know, parents and teachers, these are the compilations of the most common questions that I get. And I wanted to house it in a way that's systematic, step by step. The 3 steps, like if you're like, I want to start meditating with my kid today, what are the 3 steps that I need to do? Well, I laid it out and I made it very accessible for parents, very short videos. So they're between 3 to 5 minutes long. And I teach you the exact, like, okay, if you're starting, if you have children between the ages of 1 and 3, 4 and 8, or 8 and up, this is where you start, because it's a different foundational tool for each age range and what you're focusing on. And then I walk you through those 3 steps. And really, it's ended up being a primer for adults too. You're like, okay, if I want to start a meditation practice consistently and know that I'm doing it the right way, like from the active meditation, so I can build that foundation, then eventually do the passive meditation where I'm just focusing on my breath. This is going to be the guide step for that. And, you know, as you know, like my son, who's 5, is very, very, you know, proactive in helping teach this. And so a lot of kids really resonate when he's teaching it. So I have videos of him demonstrating the exercises, him explaining it. He's 5, but he's really articulate and kids just love him and just relate to him. So it's me giving the instruction as far as like parent to parent, but then my son is there so that parents can actually put on, like, to inspire, right? Their child.
Like, you've never done this before. Of course. That's
so
smart.
Put it on with a little kid, right? And they're like, oh, he's doing it. And he's having a great time. So yeah. That's what it really is. It's a very, it's not very like long extended. It's a short course that's just going to give you exactly what you need. And then all the exercises to ride you through are in the book. So then like I explained, like how I organize the book, I have that in the course. So you'll know exactly how to use the book, what tools to use. And I kind of just right. explained it right now to you too. And if you right. get the book, it explains it as well too. So that's really what I designed it for. Parents that just need to learn on their own pace.
Yeah, that's amazing. I feel like your son should start his own like YouTube channel. And he should just do like the yogi for the kids. And my daughter is like now, she watches this little girl named Emma who has like mm-hmm. 40 million like views. And Emma just does pretend play. And so like she pretends to sell ice cream out of like an ice cream store. And the other day, my daughter said to me, "Do you want ice cream, Mom?" And I said, "Sure, how much is it?" And she said, $5. And I was like, "How did you just come up with that figure?" And it's because she saw Emma do it on YouTube.
That's amazing. And she probably gets it a little bit for you. How much is that? The valuation of that is about $5.
Yes. Yeah. But like, you know, just to come up with that vocabulary is like insane. So I think you should consider your son being the next YouTube star because
he's definitely taking over my podcast because I do Mommy IU podcast, and even from like last season to this season.
I'm losing you.
Am I back? Sorry about that.
You're back. You're back. It's totally fine.
I'm just getting a phone call.
I was just going to say, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I know you're a busy mom. You're a full-time, you know, meditation guru. You're also a mom of two. And I really, really appreciate you coming on here. I learned a lot. I will say I'm going to go through the book and try and experience some of this with my daughter. I'm going to report back to you because that's that I feel like I'll get feedback from you and it'll be a great conversation. Thank you so much for coming on Real Talk with Ronnie. It's been a pleasure. Congratulations on being in the Parenting Magazine. You had a feature come out.
Yes. Thank
Congratulations
you.
On that. And I really appreciate you sharing all your wisdom with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ronnie. This was amazing.
Cool. Thanks, Tejal.
Bye.
Bye.